Hello and welcome back to module 4 of the Azure Remote App Jumpstart. We are going to be taking a look in this module at the differences between a hybrid and a cloud deployment. And in order to do that, we're going to go through these things inside of our detailed agenda. We're going to look at what user account types are supported by each different deployment type. We're also going to have a look at how the hybrid architecture comes together. And then we're going to have a look at the common things that people do wrong with their hybrid configuration. So share some of those gotchas so that you can not end up in those kind of situations. And then we'll have a look at the technical differences between the deployments, have a little bit of a look under the hood at what's going on down there. So, Eric, to start taking us through, what are the supported authentication methods that we have?
Thanks. So in the last module, I showed for cloud deployments, and I talked about Microsoft accounts could be associated with cloud deployments. They cannot be with hybrid deployments. And so I got a really cool table to explain all this. So let's jump down to the slides here. And so on the left-hand side, you'll see the different type of user accounts. And on the right-hand side, you'll see where which ones are available in cloud or hybrid on that. And so, you know, the top one, Microsoft accounts, are only available in cloud. In terms of Azure Active Directory accounts, and we list them down. And so there's a lot of flavors of those. I mean, everything down to the third party supported items to AD Connect. And AD Connect, what I mean by that is those, that's the new name for directory synchronized accounts for those ones, or federated accounts. Easy way of that. And as you could see, all the way down through cloud, everything is supported all the way through multi-factor authentication. And that includes O365 accounts. And this is a really key point. I get this question maybe once a week on forums or at a customer call. A lot of people, hey, can I use O365 accounts in Azure Remote App? And the answer to that is yes, because underneath, you know, Brad talked about this, the foundation of identity, it really resides in Azure. So O365 accounts underneath are really Azure Active Directory accounts. And I'm going to show how you can do that. So if you have an O365 deployment, you can actually connect to that and manage it in Azure. And I'm going to show you how to do that later on. Because what you'll need to do is either create your Azure Remote App instances or your collections in that same Azure subscription or delegate it out. I have a couple of slides later on that'll really explain that. But the key point that I really want to emphasize in this is that O365 accounts underneath are really Azure Active Directory accounts.
Yep.
So that's cloud. On the right-hand side is hybrid. And so they're the checkboxes are not all on that. And so you can't use Microsoft accounts. You can't use Azure Active Directory cloud accounts. Why? Well, to fundamentally understand that, we have to go back and look at the reason or understand how a hybrid deployment is actually architected. And so when we look at that, I have a great diagram that I'm actually going to walk you through. And so when you create a hybrid deployment, you know, you go back to the Azure Management Portal, you click plus, it's going to ask you a couple of questions, but there's a couple of things that you'll have to do after you create your collection or you actually create it. And the first one, this is in the bottom right-hand corner, is you're going to have to link a virtual network, and then you're going to have to provide domain credentials, and then, you know, link an image, the step 2 and 3. It's really that first step of 1. And so to understand what happens within this is really key. I get this question a lot. I got it at Ignite. I get it in customer calls, and really understanding the architecture for this. So for this, the sake of this example, back to the slides, is on the left-hand side, I've got my domain controller. That's on-premises. Now you could have that running in an Azure VM, but for the sake of right here, I've got it on-premises. And the first thing that you'll want to do is in the Azure console management portal is create an Azure VNet. Create that VNet, and that will be up in Azure. Then you'll want to connect those two together using a VPN. You could use ExpressRoute or a site-to-site connection. But really, at this point in time, your Azure VNet is an extension of your on-premises network. And so in that Azure VNet, you could create your custom image. You could create other things in that particular VNet. But what's going to happen after you've done these prerequisites and you provided your domain join credentials? We're going to ask you for that, and that's you're going to have to specify an OU, the credentials that you want to use. Because what's going to happen when we go through that provisioning phase, what's happening underneath when I talked about it earlier is like we're creating copies of those images and we're making them VMs. Well, that's being done back in your Azure VNet. So looking back here at the slides is during that provisioning phase, whoops, I went the wrong way, is those instances during the provisioning process are being created in that Azure VNet and they're being domain joined back through that express route or that site-to-site VNet connection. And so at the end of that, you're gonna actually have those instances running on your corporate network for all intents and purposes. And so that's what's gonna be completed at the end of that. And so when we look at the common failures of that particular thing, one of the things we have is, well, what we've seen and what we've been getting through the forum reports and different things is that domain join is actually failing. And so what we'll want to do is make sure that that VNet has access to that domain in order to do that domain join. Now, again, that domain, like I talked about, that VNet needs to be configured properly so that the DNS actually will route to the proper domain. You've specified the proper credentials to do domain join, and you specified the proper OU for that. Mm-hmm. And again, at the end of that provisioning process, those Azure Remote instances are in that Azure VNet. They're domain joined to your corporate environment. And you could, so if you're on CorpNet, you could ping them if you wanted to, you know? Yeah. You could do other things that you want on that. And I talked earlier about you could even install the Config Manager client or apply group policy. This is your environment. It's being hosted and managed in Azure on that. So thinking about that domain join process, some of the common things that we've been seeing on here is we recommend that you at least allocate 30 IP addresses, but we recommend to have at least 100 because if you're scaling up or scaling down, we want to make sure that we have the appropriate amount of IP addresses on the back end to do that. Ensure that you have the proper DNS. So on that VNet, make sure that the DNS IP address is properly will route to your domain so that when you specify the domain credentials, it'll properly go to the DNS and actually perform that domain join. Another big key item, forced tunneling is not supported. We've got a great feedback on that. And you know, internally, we're actually testing this out right now. We have a select few customers. So that thing that Brad was talking about, flighting, yeah. Well, this is one of the things that we're actually flighting right now with a couple of customers. So we got great feedback. Hey, you released Express Route support. You released the ability to reuse an existing VNet in a hybrid deployment. And forced tunneling, a lot of people have configured that particular. So we made some changes and we're actually flighting that internally and with a select few customers right now. So although it's not officially supported out there, I would expect here shortly, if not very, very soon, that us to support that. And then lastly, that VNet requires internet access. And so during this collection creation process, if the process ever fails, so like you know, the last operation couldn't contact DNS or you get some failure on that, the easiest way to go back and to troubleshoot that is go back, create an Azure VM in that same VNet that you specified. So you just have an Azure VM running there, remote desktop to it, and then try to perform a domain join. That's a simple way. It's just the classic way of doing it. And if the domain join does not succeed, then you need to troubleshoot that. If it succeeds, then open a support ticket because that's on our end.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the easiest way. And so again, to just describe that really clearly. So if you're having hybrid collection failures, the easiest process to do that is create just another Azure VM in that same VNet, remote desktop to it, and then try to domain join that to the and if it works, great. If not, then you need to troubleshoot the reason why that domain join is not working on that.
So one of the questions that we had from Jess, which I think you've covered, if you've got an Azure VPN already inside of the VNet that you're provisioning to, that's just going to get used, isn't it?
Yeah.
Connectivity back. There's nothing special that you need to do.
Nope, just nothing. We did. It used to be like that, but we changed it. You know, we heard overwhelming feedback. They're like, we already have a VNet, and we have an express route, or we already have a site-to-site. Why do you require another one? And so that's where we had it, and we recently changed that. That was a new feature. We listened to the feedback that you guys were talking about. We implemented it, and we're actually adding that for cloud deployments. That should be live here within the next couple of weeks. Not today. Cloud deployments we still create on a private VNet, but you'll soon be able to reuse a VNet. And so for hybrid deployments, this really opened the way for people to use ExpressRoute or anything else in that VNet, and we're just simply leveraging existing VNet for that.
Cool. Awesome. Okay.
So at this point in time, you should have a good understanding of the architecture behind that. Now, going back to the reason why we only allow directory synchronized accounts for hybrid deployments, let's talk about the experience of launching an application. This is really, really key. So going back here to the storyboard, up on the top left, we have our on-premises domain. It's connected to our Azure VNet. We have our Azure Remote App instances in there. We have Azure Active Directory, and you've configured AD Connect, your directory synchronizing your user identity up in Azure. And so at this point in time, you've met the requirements for a hybrid deployment. Now, the experience of a user signing on, and we often get this, when a user logs on to the client, he's going to sign in, and that authentication is going to go against Azure Active Directory. And that's going to give him the list of his available applications that he has. But when he selects that application, what's going to happen underneath is he's going to get another prompt. And this is what really confuses people. This second prompt in a hybrid deployment is actually a logon prompt to the Azure Remote App instances, those VMs that are running in that VNet that are connected back. And so you need to enter those credentials. And so what we often see is, you know, why do I not have a single sign-on experience all through this? These are kind of what the process that happens on those particular things. So understanding why you have the prompts and what those are purposely for. Now, the common misconfiguration that we hear with people is, I've assigned access, and that's why we require directory synchronized accounts. Sorry, it was like a huge point I missed. That's why we require directory synchronized accounts, because we actually do a logon. So you've synchronized that identity up into Azure. And that second prompt, that is why, because you're actually doing a domain logon. So in my case, you know, ericoar@microsoft.com, if I were to launch this, as you could see in this example, I'm actually doing a domain logon to that. And so when I launch that application, it could be IE, I could get to my internal web pages. I can get to that. For all intents and purposes, those Azure Remote App instances are on your corporate environment, and they're able to get to anything else where you were on with any of your other PC.
Yep.
So that's the reason why, fundamentally, that we require you to have directory synchronized accounts when using a hybrid deployment of Azure Remote App. So one of the things that we hear about common misconfigurations is, well, what happens if I'm using a .local? You know, I've got Windows Server Essentials, and I have a .local. Does that work? And the answer to that question is yes. But you there's some things that you need
UPN
to do.
Tweaks. Yeah,
UPN tweaks. This is no different than what if you were using a .local with you know, O365 mm-hmm. with the same thing on that. Yeah. So you can synchronize up your .local into Azure Active Directory. You can actually specify that. But what you'll need to do is go back, and on the screenshot down there is make sure you associate it. So if I assign, you know, Eric at, you know, mydomain.microsoft.com, I actually have that UPN suffix, because that second prompt does that domain logon. And so an on-Microsoft account can't do an on-premise domain logon. Same with a Microsoft account. So you have to have those UPN matching on that. And so this hangs up a lot of people. Same with untrusted forests. You got to make sure that you do your mapping properly on those. So UPN suffix is the common on that.
Yeah, we actually spent a lot of time in the first jumpstart of this series going through how to correctly configure Azure Active Directory Sync, Azure AD Connect, going through all of the DNS settings that you might need to put in place, going through making any UPN changes that you might need, and also doing any of the major the transformations of attributes, the filtering of attributes, the filtering of specific user accounts or directory partitions before you bring them into Azure Active Directory. So if you didn't see that first episode of this Jumpstart series, go back to the place where you signed up for this particular Jumpstart, and you'll be able to find the Azure Active Directory Core Skills Jumpstart, which will really take you through all of those very detailed bits of information. And it'll also help with one of the questions that we had that came in over the Q&A that was specific to, how do I do the DNS settings? How do those things get set up? What do I need to put in place? They're all Azure Active Directory DNS settings. They're not things that are specific to Azure Remote App.
Correct. That's it. We're just leveraging your existing configuration and your environments to actually host all that.
Yeah.
So going back, what are the key differences? Let's recap on this. So back to the slides. In here, can I deploy to an existing VNet? Cloud, yes. It's coming soon. Follow our blog. We'll announce that as part of the you know, things. Hybrid, yes, we showed that. The next ones are very key, and I have yeses wrapped around those. So requires directory synchronized user accounts. You understand the reason for that. Requires domain join, yes, hybrid does. Requires domain controller to be accessible by the VNet, yes, because of that domain join process. So those are the really key differences between cloud and hybrid. And so when you think about your application, does your application need to access those back-end data sources, those databases, file servers that are on in your corporate environment? And do they need to have certain authentication in order to do that? And so really the pivot comes down to, do you need domain join or do you not in that sense? So that's the really key differences between what a cloud deployment and a hybrid deployment is. You know, looking on, one of the other things, talking about assigning users, so I already talked about this in the earlier session of you can only assign users from one directory. And so that specified directory, I actually showed this in the last module of how to switch that default directory. So you can have multiple domains in a directory, but we can only assign users from one directory on that.
Yeah.
And so this goes back to, hey, O365, you talked about that, Eric. How does that work? And so on the left-hand side of the screen is a screenshot of the O365 portal. And so down at the bottom, you'll have a little thing under the admin node. It says Azure AD. And so when you're logged on to the O365 portal, you click on the Azure AD, you're going to have to follow a series of prompts if you've not set it up. But eventually, you're going to show up in the Azure Management portal because that's where all your identity, it's really extrapolated. O365 extrapolated that identity that's Azure Active Directory. But what we've seen is people are like, hey, I've gone out and I've gotten a Azure subscription that corporate uses, and I can't assign my O365 users. Well, you're either going to have to go to that O365 subscription and convert it into a full Azure subscription,
yeah,
or delegate that through the global administrator to the other subscription. And so that's just simple delegation of that. And once you do that, you can go back over to the subscription where you're creating the Azure Remote App, and those users are going to be available for that particular directory. And so that's commonly what we see with people. So I get a question on that one probably twice a week on that particular item on that. So yes, what we have on that one.
So a couple of the quick questions just to answer a couple of these around authentication and federation and things, because it's just worth getting some of these out there. The first one came in from Jose. Do we support using two-factor authentication, Azure MFA, in essence, to access Azure Remote App?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Yep, definitely.
It just works. There is one thing to watch out for with that, which is if you're if you have turned on two-factor authentication, and then you're going into, say, an Office application, the Office 2013 apps don't support MFA. So you'll have to actually, you will actually have to issue a per app password for that particular instance for the user, and they'll have to enter that per app password in order to sign their Office 365 account into the Office apps. So just be aware of that one. The other one is...
Tap on that a little bit more. So some new features coming from conditional access where you actually can say, hey, for Azure Remote App, I always want to require multi-factor authentication. And so those are some new things that are coming, and you could specify only from these subnets and you know, don't require when I'm on my corporate network, but allow other ways. So those are some things that are coming as they light them up within conditional access.
Yeah, that is actually a really useful feature because you don't necessarily want to nag people with too many multi-factor authentication requests when they're on-prem. It can get a little bit tedious for your users. So just think about how you use those things in the right way. Another question that came in as well was, can you make it so that the user never really gets asked for any passwords once they've signed into Azure Remote App? And I guess the answer there is yes, as long as you've configured everything correctly.
Yeah, not today. It's a great piece of feedback that we get that the users have to download the client, that they have to then sign in a particular client. And then for a cloud deployment, you won't get that second prompt that I spot because it's not doing a domain login. It's just going to launch the particular application, kind of like what I showed earlier with PowerPoint. But for a hybrid deployment, you will get that second prompt. You know, we're looking at working with the Windows team on that to figure out how to optimize that. So it is a complete single sign-on experience for that. But for right now, that's currently what we have.
And as soon as you go through that second sign-on though, you are fully authenticated with Kerberos. So you're probably not going to see anything else at that point, any other sign-on requests, as long as you've got the rest of your, say, your ADFS environment, any other single sign-on requirements set up for your normal on-prem environment. So that's all going to go away. Hopefully, they're not going to get lots of prompts, but it is going to require a little bit of user testing to just get through that. There was also a question around, could you pre-stage credentials for the VNet app in the credential manager so that they wouldn't get prompted with other credentials? And I just wanted to clear that up because there's nothing that's probably a little bit of confusion in the way that folks understood that. It's not that you're having to authenticate to the VNet, it's that you're authenticating into the on-prem Active Directory.
Yes.
It's not a VNet or a VPN requirement, yep. So there's always going to be the need to enter the domain credentials.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hosting those Azure Remote instances in Azure, just like if you were to have an on-premise, you know, login. You know, if you had deployed remote app on-premise, you would have a logon prompt for that if you were to do a domain logon.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to the end of this particular module. So just in summary, we've had a look at the different types of user accounts that are supported and the very particular cases on where we support using different types of accounts, MSAs, or using accounts that are from Active Directory and synchronized. We've had a look at the architecture overview, so how hybrid comes together, how it enables certain interactions with your on-prem environment. We've also had a look at some of those misconfigurations, some of the things that folks get wrong around UPN configurations, around not having enough IP addresses available, all that kind of stuff. And then also, we've looked at the differences between the different types of deployments under the hood. So quite a comprehensive module around all of that. We're going to take a really short break, and then we're going to come back with our final module in just a few moments.